Welcome to the Fit and Fabulous podcast with Dr. Jamie Seaman.
Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Jamie, and welcome back to the Fit and Fabulous podcast. It is so lovely to have you here with us today. I have an incredible guest that I want to introduce you to, and today you are going to hear her incredible story. And you may not think about the mouth and about teeth and about dentistry when it comes to health and metabolic health, but I promise you, we are going to make the connection. So please meet Dr. Sonia Chopra. She is a doctor of dentistry. She's also the tooth saver. She's a board certified endodontist, a TEDx speaker, Forbes contributor, author, endodontic instructor, and founder of the Ballantine Endodontics in Charlotte, North Carolina. On top of running her thriving practice, Dr. Chopra provides groundbreaking digital education and community support to general dentists and endodontists who want to up-level their technical skills, patient experience, and practice efficiency. Through her thoughtfully designed courses and in-person programs, such as her award-winning e-school, she is revolutionizing endodontic continuing education through simple, tangible lessons rooted in her own diverse experience. Dr. Chopra, welcome to the Fit and Fabulous podcast.
Thank you so much. It's such an honor to be here.
Well, you have an extremely unique story that led you down the path of endodontics. So please share that with all of us.
Yeah. So I think it's important to acknowledge that, you know, dentists can have toothaches too. and I'm one of those. I was literally born to be a dentist because I was born without eight teeth. And so as I was going through my growth and development, it was really important to not just me, but also my parents, that I had a full occlusion. So we worked really hard together to establish that before I went to college. But soon after I started all that work, I got a toothache, and a really bad one, and one in which it was really hard to diagnose. I was having a lot of referred pain. My normal dentist couldn't really identify where the pain was coming from. And so that kind of led to a series of referrals, even outside of dentistry and into the medical world. I even met a neurologist because they thought I had trigeminal neuralgia. And it was just a tooth, you know, that would kind of, you know, give me a little bit of pain, and then it would go away, and then it would come back, and then it would go away. And then eventually I ended up swelling up really big because the infection was kind of left alone for a while because nobody could figure out where it was coming from. And I was sent not to the endodontist to save my tooth, but actually directly to the oral surgeon first. And they numbed me up, took my tooth out. I felt great temporarily, but as soon as that anesthesia wore off, my toothache was back with a vengeance. And I had realized that they diagnosed and extracted the wrong tooth that needed care.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So now I was missing an extra tooth. but then I was referred to this amazing endodontist who really took the time to make me understand what I was experiencing in my body and made me trust my body again and what the signs that it was giving me to let me know that something was up and that I needed to get some treatment. And he did a root canal on me, alleviated my pain, and saved my tooth. And that series of events in my life, I was 17 years old, really had a huge impact on me. And I was kind of destined to be a doctor too, because my whole family's doctor, plus I'm Indian, so I really didn't have much of a choice. I had to be a dentist or a doctor. So I chose dentistry because I was always the patient. And then when I went to dental school, I was very intrigued by endodontics, this specific specialty. And I was really curious as to why I had that specific tooth story. And then I became an endodontist and started my own practice. And then I realized, wow, like there's so many years have passed. I went from 17 to like 32. And now I'm still seeing my same tooth story in my own patients. So it's really kind of started this shift in me that like, okay, my impact really has to go beyond the four walls of my practice. I feel like there's more that this world needs to know. And so I'm on this mission for people to really understand and appreciate their teeth a little bit more, specifically with respect to root canal therapy.
Wow. Okay, so for people listening, can you tell us exactly what an endodontist is? Everybody probably knows what a dentist is. They go get their teeth cleaned, and maybe just kind of that pathway, because I have a cousin that's a periodontist. You
Yes.
mentioned oral surgery. I think people have probably heard of orthodontists that do braces.
Right.
Can you kind of tell us What differentiates all these people and what you
do? Yeah, it's a great question. So just like medicine, dentistry is a highly specialized field. You know, you're an OBGYN, and so you probably wouldn't do brain surgery on somebody. And so just like that, dentistry is that specialized. So an endodontist is someone who treats the pulp of the tooth, so all the stuff that's inside the tooth, where opposed the periodontist will treat the gum and the bones. The oral surgeons will do more, you know, some trauma related stuff, the wisdom teeth. You know, you have your orthodontist who does braces, you have your pediatric dentist who does the children. So there's a lot of really important subspecialties within dentistry, but I basically do root canals for a living.
Wow. Okay. So tell us, what is a root canal?
So root canal is a procedure that you do when a tooth gets infected. So bacteria essentially gets inside to the pulp of the tooth and starts to change that pulp and into a state of disease. So a root canal will basically go in and disinfect the tooth. So when a tooth gets infected, you can either get a root canal or an extraction, but the root canal allows you to save your tooth.
So what are some of the myths surrounding root canals? I know I've heard in my life, like, I would rather get a root canal than do that.
I know,
so
which
sounds like a really horrible thing.
And I can see why, because historically, you know, we didn't have great anesthetics. And so if you do something like a root canal without proper anesthesia, then you are going to have a very painful event. But nowadays, root canal therapy has really come a long way. Even, you know, I've been only doing endodontics in my practice for the last 15 years. And how I practice now is so different than how I practiced 15 years ago. So there's been such a tremendous shift in the technology. And what I can do today is way better than what I could have done at the beginning of my practicing years. But yeah, it's kind of, I feel like it's unfair now to say that. Like, people dread it. And, you know, there's family members, you know, grandparents that have had really bad experiences with root canal therapy. But I'm here to really remind people that it's okay to trust the process. And root canal therapy is extremely safe, and it's better than ever. There's no better time to get a root canal than now.
So talk about how the mouth is the gateway to the body, because that fascinates me when I think about just metabolic health and how the health of our mouth impacts really every organ system.
Yeah, there's so much that goes on here. First of all, there's so much importance, and there's so much reason to value what we have going on in our mouth and to really respect the function of our teeth. Our teeth provide us nutrition, obviously. They also provide us hydration. They provide us confidence. They are what attract people into our lives to, you know, have that life partner. They're also responsible for maintaining your airway so that your tongue has a home and doesn't obstruct your airway. So teeth are really important for breath too. And so this is where everything starts. It's the beginning part of our digestion. It's where we block microbes. You know, it is a happy home to a lot of bacteria, but we also have to make sure that we create the right ecosystem, keep that ecosystem in check so that the bacteria don't overcultivate and create different relationships with each other and start creating biofilms that could actually have a negative effect. So really taking care of this is important, because if you don't, you could, periodontal health is also very much related to cardiovascular health and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing you mentioned in your story is you got sent straight to somebody to pull this tooth out, to do this tooth extraction. And obviously you feel now that that was not the right path. So what is the harm in just pulling the tooth prematurely?
So it depends on where you are in your growth and development. If you are still growing and you take a tooth out, you can lose a lot of space. And now we're even seeing the orthodontists make a huge shift. They used to take teeth out for braces, and now we want to keep those teeth and we'd rather expand the palate. So you really don't want your dentition to collapse. So the more you can maintain your teeth, the better. Again, there's so much value just in your breath for your teeth.
Okay. So let's go back to kind of talking about this oral microbiome. So I looked at I'm very fascinated by this because I had somebody else on the podcast who was talking about specific bacteria in the mouth and their association with pregnancy outcomes, preterm birth, preeclampsia, you know, all these different things. And I found that the oral cavity is considered the second most complex microbiota in the human body behind the colon, which, of course, the mouth and the colon are connected by a tube. But this high diversity of microorganisms has not only bacteria, it's got fungi, viruses, archaea, protozoa, all these different things. So how can we, like, let's talk about, I guess, just basic oral care. How can we support ourselves from getting a tooth abscess in the first place?
Yeah, so you're right. Prevention is key to success. And I think that really having good hygiene practices is so important. I tell people, like, my practice shouldn't be as busy as it is, right? There's so many ways that you can prevent me, but I have to be there for people because people have 32 chances to need me, right? So prevention is key. And, you know, it's really simple and economical to prevent me. You know, brushing twice a day, I think, is important. Most people are there. It's not hard for them to brush in the morning, right? Because they don't want the morning breath, right? So that's easy. It's the nighttime brushing that people typically skip because maybe you fall asleep on the couch and transferring to your bed, you might skip going to the bathroom to do that final wash up. But it's really, really important that you brush your teeth before you go to bed because you are going to have a decrease in your saliva before you go to bed. Your saliva production is important to buffer the acidic environment that you can get in your mouth. So really making sure you go to bed clean is really important. I also can't stress enough the importance of flossing. So water picking and flossing is very different. You can do a water pick, but I really believe that there's no replacement for floss. And a lot of times the decay that starts in your teeth that leads to a root canal starts in between the teeth. You know, when you floss and you make that little click, That's the little point that obviously toothbrushing can't get in, right?
Right.
That little click is where you want to disrupt the bacteria from colonizing because that's where the decay will come. And you'll look in the mirror, you'll open your mouth, and you won't even feel that there's anything going on because this is happening all underneath the surface and in between the teeth. So really don't skimp on the floss. And it's very cheap to buy floss. Especially if it can avoid a root canal.
Yeah. Is there a particular, I've heard different things out there, different materials of floss, like there used to be Teflon coated floss and things like that. Is there a particular type that people should look for?
I think everyone is going to be different because everyone's going to have different things going on in their mouth. Let me give you myself as an example. Because I've had so many restorations to, you know, complete my bite, I have implants on one side, which are really, really tight. And I can only use the dental tape to really get in there in that contact click spot. Whereas other places, I have more spaces. So I use an expanding floss in that area. So I use multiple types of flosses, but I really enjoy the expanding kind. I don't think that there's one floss that's better than the other, but I do think that there's different applications for different flosses. Does that make sense?
What about the little flosser toothpicks? You know, those seem convenient. I've got three little kids, like anything you can do, right, to get them. Are those the same or do you get better, you know, friction in those little spaces wrapping around your fingers?
I personally like just the plain old floss, but I do have the manual dexterity to understand how to use it. Now, if you're younger or if you're older where you lose that manual dexterity, those are definitely beneficial.
Okay. Okay. And then when it comes to toothpaste, man, you go to the toothpaste aisle and there's like fluoride free. I'm starting to see like these newer hydroxyapatite, like it can be very confusing. What should people look for there?
So I don't really have a favorite brand. I like to use, you know, I'm just like a Crest girl, but again, there's going to be a lot of controversy over fluoride, but I will say that everybody's oral bacteria is going to be different. It's going to be unique to you. Some people have karyogenic bacteria. So that means the bacteria in their mouth is actually going to end in decay. So those people may actually benefit from having a little fluoride in their toothpaste, right? Whereas somebody else may just have, you know, more of they may not have any carcinogenic bacteria, but they could have periodontal disease causing bacteria. So having fluoride may not really benefit them. So really understanding what your mouth goes through. If you go to the dentist and you get 8 cavities every time you meet us, you probably need additional fluoride. But if you are a cavity-free mouth, then you probably don't need it. So again, everything needs to be specific to you. Everyone's going to be different. So really understand and appreciate your particular oral microbiome and buy the products that suit you.
Yeah, interesting. Of course, something else that we do with our mouths multiple times per day, our diet and food we eat. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about how that could impact people's risk for getting these infections and abscesses?
Yeah, so I always tell people if you're going to eat dessert, eat it. Don't snack on things. Have your dessert at the end of a meal, because whenever you have something sweet or actually any kind of carbohydrate, that's when the pH in your mouth drops into that acidic environment. So if you're already eating something, then you're decreasing that pH during that meal. If you are going to be a snacker and eat sweet things in between your meals, you're just increasing the frequency of the pH dropping in your mouth. So maybe if you're going to have something sweet, tack it onto the back end of a meal so you decrease the frequency that the pH drops. Does that make sense?
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so you were saying how sugar and carbohydrates can, you know, change the pH of the mouth and increase the risk of, exposure essentially to pathogenic bacteria. So the modern diet clearly is not great, right? Compared to 50, 100, hundreds of years ago.
Yeah.
Dental problems, endodontic problems are, you know, more because we've become industrialized and we have so many processed foods and things like that. So do you think that, cutting sugar and carbohydrates out of a diet, like I used to be a pre-diabetic, so I eat a very low carb, almost ketogenic diet sometimes. But I've not had a lot of, cavities and problems in my lifetime, regardless. But do you think that there's dietary strategies for somebody that has been battling periodontal disease or multiple root canals or something like that? Do you think that can make a difference for getting some of these bad bacteria out of their mouth?
You know, I don't know if I know the answer to that, just because when I see people, that's already like the point of no return. I'm not the general dentist who's actually like witnessing patients like long-term. I meet patients once and then I'm done with them. So I don't really follow people along to know the impact of that. So it is a great question, but I don't know if that's like really what I see on a day-to-day basis. But it's really interesting to see the difference in like how the human skeleton was, you know, if you look at a skull and the teeth before and how being industrialized has really had an impact. Again, this is where having a good relationship with your dentist is so important. And you asked me about some preventative measures. Going to the dentist twice a year is so important because that's where we can catch things early. And then you can kind of see what your trends are. Again, those two preventative appointments a year is really important to avoid me. And then some people, because they do get a lot of plaque accumulation, they do get that periodontal disease. More of those patients who get the periodontal disease over the cavities, they're the ones who need to get cleanings more often. So maybe instead of the standard 2 times a year, they do the 3 or 4. But I think you kind of have to understand your personal oral microbiome and then figure out how to customize your oral care to that.
Is there a way to test for that?
It's coming. There are a lot of new like salivary test kits that are coming on the market that you're going to be seeing. And that way you will be able to customize your oral care.
Wow. So the bacteria that cause endodontal disease, so in the pulp, are these the same bad guys that cause periodontal disease? Like, does it start in the gums and go to the pulp? Can it just spontaneously happen in the pulp? Can you just expand on that?
Yeah. So the ways you could need a root canal are obviously you have a cavity. It's gone so deep that now the bacteria has hit the nerve. You can also be very stressed out, grind your teeth and induce a crack. And now that crack becomes a doorway for the bacteria to get in. You can also have periodontal disease and have deep pockets and the bacteria can get in that way. But more often than not, It is a big cavity or a crack that is causing root canals, or even trauma. So sometimes you'll have an impact, like a sports injury, or maybe a car accident, or maybe you just trip and fall and you just hit your tooth wrong or something, or you face plant. So trauma is a big thing as well.
Yeah, I have a very personal story about that. We were on vacation a year ago, and my middle daughter was walking on a playground, just walking, and turned and hit her face into a piece of playground equipment. And I got the dreaded phone call while I was out of town, right when school's letting out at 3:30 on a Friday, that she had knocked out her, she didn't knock out the whole tooth, but she had fractured her front teeth, like pretty jaggedly, like straight across. And of course, we called the dentist immediately and got the on-call, you know, doctor and took her in. And thankfully, they were able to save her front teeth and now have, you know, had to cosmetically rebuild them. But I guess give somebody advice if they, if this happens to them, what do you do to save the teeth in these situations?
Yeah, so this is one of my favorite things to talk about, so thank you for bringing it up. if you're, like, let's say your daughter actually knocked out the whole tooth, because this can happen to anyone, like, and it could be a complete fluke accident, right? And you don't know what to do. Most people, and this is what I talk about in my TED Talk, most people will pick up the tooth, they'll put it in a Ziploc bag, and then they'll go to the emergency room. Actually, what you want to do, if you're brave enough, is really pick up the tooth and put it right back in the socket.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And most people are going to be freaking out because of the blood. You know, you're worried that you're going to hurt your child if it's your child who got hurt. Maybe you think the tooth is dirty, but you really want to handle that tooth with care. You want to make sure that you're only touching it by the crown. So the part that you see when you smile, the white part and not the yellow root part, you want to just touch it by the crown. If you feel like it's dirty, your first inclination is probably going to be go run it under the sink. You don't want to run it under the sink. You actually don't want to rinse it with water. If you feel like it's really dirty and you're like, ooh, I don't want to put that in my child's mouth like that, then find some milk and just gently rinse it. Don't scrape the root. Don't do anything, but just gently rinse the root with some milk and then stick it back in and then hold it there. And if you can get that tooth back in like under 30 to 60 minutes, your body will like re-accept that tooth as if it never left at all.
Wow.
But when you wait longer than an hour, so when you panic for 10 minutes, right, then put it, find the Ziploc bag, go in the car, go to the emergency room. Now it's 30, 45 minutes later. And then in the emergency room, since you're not having a stroke, you're going to wait 6 hours before somebody sees you. You're losing your chances of like letting that tooth reattach to your body.
Fascinating. So after you stick it back in, I mean, obviously it's, I feel like it's like a newly planted tree, right?
You're supposed to like, you're going to have to splint it. Right. So you want to splint it. So you want to go to the dentist. Don't go to the emergency room because they're really not trained on how to do this. So go to your dentist, go to your endodontist because that's what we're trained to do. Even oral surgeons or, you know, some people are in their orthodontic brackets and orthodontists are good at this as well. But you're going to want to stabilize the tooth. So it'll have to be splinted. If there's no alveolar fracture, so the jawbone didn't get broken or anything, then you just have to splint that tooth in for about 2 weeks. The type of splint you use is really important too. But you don't want to have it too rigid because you really want some physiologic movement of the tooth. So I don't know if you've ever noticed that your teeth kind of bounce a little bit. Because the teeth aren't fused to the jawbone. They have these ligaments, the periodontal ligament. And that those fibers are what you're trying to preserve in an avulsion. When you scrape the root, you're going to scrape those fibers. But those fibers are really important to keep alive. And they will dry out after an hour. So that's what you're trying to preserve. But that's what gives the little shock absorbing, you know, bounciness to your teeth. So if you ever feel like your tooth is loose, that's just your periodontal ligament doing its thing. But yeah, get it in there, stabilize it, splint it for 2 weeks. And after 2 weeks, it's like, it's in there and it's good.
That's fast. That's amazing.
Yeah.
What if it's a fracture?
Yeah. So if it's a fracture, depending on the tooth development, like at what age, so if like this happened to a 7-year-old,
Yeah, unfortunately, they were her adult teeth.
Yeah, you're probably still going through some root formation. So you actually don't want to do the root canal, even if the nerves get exposed, because it's a pretty big fracture. You want to maintain the vitality of those nerves, because the nerve is what's responsible for root formation. If you take out the nerve and the tooth isn't fully developed, you're not going to complete that formation. So you want to keep that tooth vital. And luckily, young pulps, young teeth are so resilient that if there's no fracture and you had like a concussion to the teeth, a lot of times those teeth will heal just fine. But if there's a fracture, sometimes you can take the fragment and just rebond it, or you can build it up with some composite. But then obviously you're going to have to wait for the growth and development so that the teeth properly like erupt into place. And then in their adulthood, they're going to have to transition into some crowns.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. You guys, it's like mother's worst nightmare.
It is. Oh my.
It's your adult teeth.
I know. When I get trauma patients, I'm not so much worried about the child as I am the parent. And I really have to let them know like everything will be okay. Luckily, we can make crowns. I mean, my teeth are all crowns. So I just smile at them and say, you can look like this.
Yeah. My cousin that's a periodontist, he was actually born with no adult teeth. So he had This is a gynecologist telling the story, but he had all baby teeth and his dad was a dentist, right? Like your story like really resonated with me because there was a child of a dentist. He was born with no adult teeth. So he had to wait till he was an adult. They pulled all his baby teeth and he has full implants. His entire mouth is implants. And he went on to become a periodontist. And now that's what he does is he's an expert at tooth implants. So yeah. And they look beautiful.
See? Amazing. I love it. What a great tooth story.
Yeah, they look beautiful. Okay, tell me, because I really don't understand, how do you actually perform a root canal? Like, do you drill into the tooth?
Yeah.
How is it actually done?
Yeah, so obviously we numb you up. I think I always tell my patients, anesthesia is key. You know, a good anesthesia makes for an easy root canal where people fall asleep. And once you're numb, then I'm going to access into the tooth. And I make as small of an opening as possible. It's really, really tiny. Like I'm trying to give like a something to measure, like just a small little like
a needle,
like a diamond stud earring, like small.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm working through that teeny tiny little hole. That's why I like to use a microscope during it, because I need to look through this teeny tiny hole and then find other smaller holes inside that. So, but let's say we're working on a front tooth. I'm going to access through the back of the front tooth. I'm not going to change the aesthetics at all. And I'm going to make a little opening to the back. And the goal in root canal therapy is to find every canal and get to the end of every canal. So when you miss a canal, the root canal is not going to work. And unfortunately, that happens quite a bit. So really understanding the internal anatomy is important. So essentially, bugs get into the tooth and they crawl up the canal space. So if you can imagine a tooth is like a Twinkie, the cream gets dirty and I go in and I pull out the cream. I give it a good cleanse and then I give my patients fresh cream.
Interesting. It's like, what do you put in there? What is the like material?
Yeah, the material is called gutta percha. It's like a rubbery kind of material. It's what golf balls are made out of actually. Oh. And yeah, and it's an inert substance, so it really just does well inside teeth.
And then, I mean, there's no, once you fill it with this, are bacteria attracted to this material or is it pretty?
So the coronal seal is important. So not only are we putting gutta percha, but we're also putting sealer inside the canal space. And even that is shifting. Like we're getting more bioceramic sealers that are super biocompatible and nothing's going to keep bacteria out. Those guys they're crazy, right? So you have to really work on the top of the tooth to seal it up. And that's typically why we'll put a crown on a tooth. Well, not only just to cover the tooth so it has a good seal, but that's also going to protect the tooth from fracturing in the future. You don't necessarily need that on a front tooth, but on posterior teeth, when we do root canals, you need to seal it with a crown. With the anterior tooth and we're going through the back, we just need a little filling, but that permanent seal is really important. Okay, and that's what keeps the bugs out.
So is a crown like to protect the enamel, like if it's really infected, broken down?
Yeah. So a lot of times you need that crown to bring that tooth back into function, because a lot of times that decay has eaten up the tooth. So now you've, it's not that the tooth really gets so brittle after the root canal. It's just more often than not, there is a crack that needs to be cared for, or there was just a lot of decay. So now a lot of tooth structure was lost because of that.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, I want to shift a little bit and talk about you being such an amazing entrepreneur and really a leader in your, you know, subspecialty. I think I saw on the internet, were you the first endodontist in North Carolina?
Is that I was the first,
true statement?
First female, like
first female.
Board yes. certified female, actually.
How yeah. big is, I guess I'm thinking like I live in Omaha, Nebraska. We have like a million people in the, or how, I mean, how common are endodontists? Is there one in every big city? Is it?
Well, there's a lot of rural areas without them. I would say last time I counted in Charlotte, there's about 25 in Charlotte.
Okay. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
And they are in like freestanding clinics. You won't, or do you find them like in dental clinics? Like, are there multi-specialty clinics in dentistry like there are in medicine?
There definitely are. And that's kind of a new theme that's getting more popular. I would say as an endodontist, it's really nice when you have multiple providers, you know, just like being an OB, we're on call, right? Like, so we need to, if we want a life, we need yes. to have, it's easier to have multiple providers, but there's a lot of solo practitioners still.
Wow. Yeah. I never even thought of that. Yeah, you do, right? So is it mostly like trauma that you guys are going to get called in for?
Yes and no. I would say like the oral surgeons get the trauma cases and then refer them to us for the big ones. I feel like I'm second in command when it comes to trauma. They'll be seen by either the general dentist or the oral surgeon, and then the referral is made. I wouldn't say I have to go in on the weekends, which is kind of nice. Like, it's not like they're having a baby. It's something that where
I can, baby can wait till Monday.
Their baby can wait till Monday, and Advil and Tylenol cocktails do really well, or even antibiotics to hold them over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna try that. I'm gonna tell people their baby has to wait till Monday. See how it works. Oh, my mom was like, when I went into medicine, she said, whatever you do, you should just not be an OBGYN. That's all she told me. And I was, here I am. So, you know, the best laid plans. Okay, but tell me how you really have made it your mission to help educate your colleagues. So tell us just a little bit about that. Are you training other endodontists with like a particular technique, general dentists, all of the above?
Yeah, so I'm basically teaching general dentists. So if just to give you some perspective, general dentists do about 80% of the root canals out there. There's not that many endodontists out there, and we do the rest of the 20%. So we really need general dentists to do them and do them well, because like I said, there's Medicaid offices that need to, you know, be able to deliver root canals. There's people in rural areas that drive 3 hours to find the closest specialist. So there's really a need for general dentists to learn endo. Unfortunately, the requirements of root canals to graduate are really low. Some schools are 2, some schools are 4. So you can imagine if you just deliver 2 babies and then you're allowed to just do that, how comfortable would people be? I don't know. It's
yeah, I guess like the parallel in my world, you know, family practitioners can do obstetrics and like midwives, they literally deliver like 40 babies in their training and that's it. You know, we deliver like 1,000.
Right.
So just the volume and the complications you see with doing that kind of volume.
Right. So I had to do 250, but even when I graduated from my residency that only did endodontics, man, did I still have a lot to learn, right? And then it wasn't until like year 3 that I felt like, okay, I know my stuff. Then year 5, I learned more. And then, you know, so there's a lot that comes with that experience. But, you know, just giving endodontics 2 weeks of a didactic portion and then 2 to 4 actual live portion in school is really not enough. And it's, you know, I just feel like we need a little bit more education around it. I didn't feel prepared when I left. And so I feel like so many other people feel the same way. And what I noticed is when I went back to get my board certification And I had to relearn all the literature and all the things after I had like 5 years of clinical endodontic experience. And I went back to relearn it. Something really shifted in me. And I learned it on a whole new level. All of a sudden, I had this new way of speaking, this new confidence, and this better understanding just by going back and restudying. So I was like, there's something here. Like, what if I created a program that allowed people to go back and study again after they've gotten some of that clinical experience under their belt? It really made a huge shift in me and my clinical ability. So maybe I can simplify endo, get all the stuff that really doesn't need to be learned. You know, there's a lot of BS, right? But what if I give the nitty gritty and really allow them to double down and focus on what's important? How could that impact more patients? You know, like I can only treat so many people, but I think I can have a bigger impact if I really trained other dentists. And they're very capable of doing that, you know, of learning it if they just kind of go down that rabbit hole and learn a little bit more. So I created an online education platform for endo, specifically geared to general dentists, to let them go deeper into the understanding of it. And first I created it all online, and then I saw that there was a need for some hands-on because some people are really hands-on learners. And I realized, wow, there's so many people in my community who can't even afford to get a root canal, and they're taking their teeth out because of financial reasons. So how can I marry the fact that people need access to care and people need access to education? So I created a live hands-on component to my platform where dentists actually come to my office. I take five dentists at a time and we do root canals for $100 for the patient. If I could do it for free, I would, but I need them to be able to show up. and so it's a massive discount of almost like $1,800-$1,900 for these patients to save their tooth. And it's really been a beautiful give back program, but also the level at which these dentists are learning now, it's incredible. So they go through my online component, they learn the theory, and they've already learned it once or twice in dental school and other CE courses, but now they really have a deep understanding, and now I can witness them implement it and make sure that it actually is sticking.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible. How many dentists have you trained to date? Do you know?
I started the program in 2020, believe it or not, during the pandemic. Somehow I managed that. And I've done three sessions, so 15 a year. So since then, 15 dentists a year since then. Yeah.
That's still a lot of, and then you think how many patients those dentists see, that's still like so many patients that you're helping. When you teach people. What is it? You kind of mentioned that it's cheaper just to pull the tooth, and that's what a lot of people do when they can't afford it. Give me like a ballpark. What's the difference? How cheap is it to extract a tooth versus do a root canal?
It's probably a couple $100, probably like $300 to $500 for an extraction versus, depending on where you live, $1,500 to $2,200 for a root canal.
And what's the circle back around again for somebody that gets an extraction, you know, or has had an extraction? I mean, what are the downstream effects again, you know, in the next years to come?
So your teeth will shift. So teeth grow to touch. So teeth actually defy gravity. So if you take out a top tooth, your bottom tooth will actually grow up. And if you take out a top tooth or bottom tooth, your top tooth will grow down, and then you can actually see it'll come below the plane of occlusion and it'll impact your smile. And then the adjacent teeth will start to tip. So you will get that movement of teeth. So again, try to save it when you can.
Okay. Interesting. So this last year I did Invisalign. I didn't have braces as a kid, but I did Invisalign cause I had some overcrowding on my bottom. Is there, a point where, you know, people that have crooked teeth are more at risk for disease? Is straightening of the teeth? I mean, I see my kids are turning 8, 10, and 12, and I see kids there. I mean, like everybody these days has like braces and things like that. Is it just cosmetic or does it make a difference long term for oral health?
I think it's both. Again, people who have narrower palates and have that high palatal vault, they definitely are more at risk for things like sleep apnea. So you'll see nowadays adult ortho, like getting into orthodontics as an adult is huge because, you know, people didn't get it as a child. And people are, we're now understanding like the problems with sleep deficits and stuff like that. And so, and there's just so much benefit to really opening up that airway and those palatal vaults.
Yeah. Mouth breathers and not enough nasal breathers. Yeah. I've had some people on the podcast that have talked about that and some profound changes to your health that, that happen when that happens. So I did a little research before the podcast and found a recent article in the Journal of Endodontics, actually just came out in May of 2023. And I have just been so fascinated by the oral microbiome. And this article is titled, "What is the Microbial Profile in Persistent Endodontic Infections?" And it was a review. They looked at 957 articles. I'm sure Dr. Chopra's read every single one. they were looking at the prevalent species, essentially, that were in these endodontic infections. And Enterococcus faecalis was a huge one. Piriformis, or Piriformonas, you could probably say these a lot faster. Prevotella, Tannerella, Treponema, Denticola. But basically, they found that the cases with symptomatology or inadequate root canal filling presented an increase in the specific bacterial species compared to no symptoms or adequate filling. So basically highlighting that there's a difference in the way that the root canal is performed, and a greater number of microorganisms were observed in teeth that had inadequate coronal restoration compared to adequate restoration. So all the things that you have essentially highlighted, it's like you could have written this in the Journal of Endodontics. it seems like you know exactly what you're talking about. But I'm just fascinated. I think there's going to be so much we find out in the next, you know, 1, 5, 10 years about the microbiome, not just in the mouth. I mean, they're doing vaginal aspirate transplants now. We're doing fecal transplants. It's just incredible what a difference. I mean, these bacteria literally run our body.
They really do. And so a lot of people are concerned that there's still bacteria left over and stuff like that. Like there's good bacteria too. And so like I believe that we need to respect them and really understand how they work to keep us alive and not be afraid of them. Like I'm really just as excited as you are for the research that is about to come and the things that we're about to learn.
Yeah. Just fostering an environment for the good bacteria to kind of do their thing and keep the pirates out.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I love it. Well, Dr. Chopra, tell people how they can find you on social media. If there's a dentist or a hygienist or somebody listening, how they can get more information about your courses.
Yeah. So I am mainly on Instagram. You can find me at Sonia Chopra DDS. That's Sonia with an I. And then the same thing for my website. It's soniachopradds.com.
Wonderful. Well, you guys, share this with somebody in your life. You probably know somebody that's had a root canal or a tooth problem. You never know who might find this information extremely helpful. And we, of course, depend on all of you to spread these important messages around the world. We will catch you on the next episode.